The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Guardian World Cup Daily. Coppers coming, John. Too right it is, and we're ready with our pre-tournament special. Busting out the big facts today as we preview Groups A to D. Group A, can the Brazilians score gazillions? Group B, are we set for another big Spanish abdication? Group C, there's some blow for Colombia, rather than the other way round, with Falcao's absence, but how much will it affect the dark horses? And what are brave young England's chances in Group D? We'll be asking all those questions and more in this part one of our special previews of the Copa do Mundo.
Passengers, we're travelling to Alicante with my scheduled ZB264. Please return to check-in or go to the ground star desk in the departure.
Right, here we are then. Everything's set. Paul Doyle's here.
Hi, James.
Hi there. Dressed for the weather, I see, Paul.
Yeah, I've got the handkerchief on my head.
Right, the attractive linen ensemble.
Yeah.
Right. Marcus Christensen's here.
Hello.
Right.
Hello.
Just back from duty free.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. James, you're travelling light today. James Horncastle.
Yeah.
Weren't even carrying a surname there for a second, but and of course, I'm here too, and someone's got the tickets, I hope. But we've got a bit of time that we can employ to nail the first four of eight World Cup groups. It's very, very exciting. Not sure how many sleeps are left until it all kicks off, but it all kicks off with Brazil against Croatia. So let's start with Group A and Brazil's group. Now, we know a lot about the Seleção, do we not? We've heard from Fernando on occasion. There's loads of stuff about them. A lot of people talking about the pressure of playing at home. But I think what we saw last year in the Confederations Cup seemed to suggest that it's anything but a disadvantage for this team.
Well, and I think that Scolari is the right man again for them. I think that's been a huge lift for them. Everyone talks about the team spirit now they've created. He's created. If you look at the team, you wouldn't say it's the best Brazil team, but starting 11 looks good. It's got different, decently defensively, even though David Luiz can always be a risk. And up front, you could be a bit worried. Neymar, he did well against Panama. But Fred and Hulk, are they?
And Joe.
Yeah, exactly. And Maicon. They haven't really shown their best here in England, but they are clearly good players, and they are my favourites, actually.
Brazil, your favourites, yeah. Yeah, the question mark a lot of people are asking is about the forwards, because they're not necessarily forwards that have been, apart from Neymar, who's got an amazing record. Was it 30? I think with the goal against Panama, it's 31 now and 48 for Brazil. Would you count them as favourites, Paul?
I make Argentina favourites, but obviously Brazil have a very strong chance. Be interesting to see how they cope with the pressure, because they're probably in World Cup history, there's probably never been a team under as much pressure as them. Apart from, say, North Korea at the last one, that's right. guy subject to the whims of murderous dictators. But or maybe Italy even in 1990, they were under a lot of pressure. But I was interested actually about 6 months ago to read an interview with Thiago Silva in L'Équipe, where they were asking him about the pressure of being the captain of Brazil as they host the World Cup. And he talked about how important Neymar was to the team, not because of his play, but because of his personality. He's such a jovial character that when they get together, himself and David Luiz, actually, he also mentioned that they just bring levity to the squad, and they don't feel the pressure when they're around. So bearing in mind Roy Hodgson and Didier Deschamps, for example, have both picked squads full of good tourists. Brazil have also taken that line. So a few Fernando Duartes in the Brazilian squad.
All right, hear what you're saying. The importance of bringing along a joker, a live wire. It does look a good squad. As I say, the pressure, but they seem to be absolutely reveling. They seem to be soaking up that energy during the Confederations Cup, in which they absolutely destroyed Spain.
Well, and they beat Italy, obviously. They beat Spain. We're familiar with this team now. It's more or less the same as we saw at the Confederations Cup last year. So I think to some extent there will be acclimatised to the pressure. To say acclimatised because they are Brazilian, they are playing in Brazil, but to the weight of expectation. And I think the performance in that tournament will be a big lift. It will perhaps give them a boost that they can, you know, replicate, even though it is a poison chalice, isn't it? Whoever wins the Confederations Cup never wins the World Cup.
Right.
News on that.
Yeah, indeed. Well, if they get through then, I mean, you'd figure them at least to get out of the group. Who else is going to make it out from Croatia, Mexico and Cameroon? Cameroon, Paul, are they any good?
They could be. They got a chance of making out of that group. It's very hard to predict Cameroon because over the last 4 years, they've been in even more of a state of chassis than normal for them. Sorry, you keep pointing at
me. Yeah, no, I was just going
to
say...
You want to interrupt. Can't help yourself. What do you want to say?
I wanted to ask about Samuel Eto'o's relationship with the rest of the team and whether they're still having a conspiracy not to pass to him. and isn't it true that they only got to the World Cup because... who was it?
Togo.
Yeah, Togo fielded ineligible players.
Yeah, that helped. That helped in most of the groups in African qualifying, though, because there was an epidemic of that sort of thing throughout the tournament. They stumbled their way through qualification, and there was all sorts of political wrangling and interference with the team, as there has been for the last 4 years. And there is the potential, even though apparently they've sorted out the bonus question ahead of the World Cup, there's still the potential for huge implosion there, because Volker Finke, the German manager, is being chaperoned by four members of a normalization committee for local coaches who've been appointed by a guy who was put in charge of another committee to restructure football in Cameroon.
Right.
And so far it's actually gone okay, but there's always the chance that the wheels will come off there, especially then you've got the Samuel Eto'o factor. He is liable to throw his toys out the pram at any moment, particularly as he may not figure as prominently on the pitch as you would like.
There's
a case for dropping him.
Right. Who would take his place, and who would be the stars then?
Vincent Aboubakar he's a striker, he's had a really good season for Lorient, will probably start up front. Eto'o may play just off him behind, seeing as he no longer has the mobility to play the centre forward role by himself, but there's that role could more productively be given to someone like what's his name, Eric Choupo-Moting.
Who got the equaliser against Germany the other night, the 2-2 draw for Cameroon.
Well, Eto'o scored that as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. That's true.
There's options
right
up front. It's in defence where Cameroon could be in trouble.
Okay, but it's quite hard to predict exactly how they are until we see them in their opener against Mexico.
Yeah, but so far in their warm up games they've been reasonably encouraging, and they'll be stronger. They seem united, coherent. They've got some good players. Stefan Mbia could bring creativity to midfield that has been lacking, and he's had a great season. Unlike, say, Alex Song, who hasn't had a great season, obviously, with his club. Mbia has recovered from his QPR misadventure and had a superb season with Sevilla, and actually has improved as a player. He's not just an enforcer. He's added actual scheming qualities to his game.
Their opening game against Mexico. It should be an appetising one for Cameroon fans, given the way that Mexico have approached this tournament. Absolutely abject in qualifying, firing three managers, needing a playoff with New Zealand to actually make it, and then the other night getting beaten. They got beaten by Bosnia 1-0. Of course, that can happen. They're going to have the most away fans. Special guest producer Pete tells me apparently they've sold a phenomenal amount of tickets to Mexican supporters.
Yeah. I think they're quite interesting. I like this the coach they got, Miguel Herrera. He seems like a bit of a cult hero, and he's got his daughter who's working in the press asking him questions in press conferences and stuff, and he's clearly lifted them. They were, like you say, in danger of missing out, and it always astonished me with their population and how much they like football over there that they don't do better at the World Cup. But I think, again, they'd probably be lucky to get out of the group.
Right. Yeah. Well, who's going to score the goals?
Yeah. Uribe Peralta, I'm told.
Oh, is that right?
Santos' front man.
Okay.
I'm told.
All right. Okay, not going to be Chicharito. He's had an awful year with...
Yeah.
Well, in general.
Yeah, he has. Most United players did,
though. All right, but Croatia would be the side, would you say, James, that are likeliest to follow Brazil out of this group?
Well, they fell apart towards the end of qualifying. I think they only took 1 point from 12. Needed a playoff to get to the World Cup against Iceland. And I think even in the first leg of that, it was difficult, even though they had a man advantage for a long period of that. Second leg, Mario Mandzukic got sent off. He'll miss the first game.
Yeah, against Brazil.
Some people claim this, you know, this Croatia team is short on quality. I don't think that's necessarily the
case.
Tell
us about their midfield.
I think their midfield is one of the best, could be one of the best in the World Cup if Kovac can find a system where he can play them all together. So Rakitic, Modric, Kovacic, who really played well towards the end of the season in Italy for Inter. I think there are a few midfields better than that in the World Cup. Or as, you know, interesting as that.
Well, Kovacic is very young. Whether he's got the personality to really impose himself on a stage.
Well, I mean, the frustration for Inter fans was he would go on international duty, perform well for Croatia, and then he would come back and they wouldn't play him. So, yeah, he had justified a place in that team before he got his chance. So, but, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to depend a lot on the opening fixtures for all of these teams, because if Brazil hammer Croatia and Cameroon, say, get a result against Mexico, I think Cameroon will probably maybe get some momentum from that. And,
right.
I don't know.
Right, you know. Okay.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Well, of course, whoever finishes second in that group will be taking on the winner of Group B, a group that includes Spain, Holland, Chile and Australia. So it's basically Oz plus one other.
Very much so.
Who's it going to... Is it Spain? The reigning world, reigning everything champions. I think they've won every single cup at club or national level. They've got them all at the moment, the Spanish. But might they be going home before the knockout stages?
No.
Well, I wrote them off before Euro 2012, so I'm not getting involved this time.
All right, what was the basis for it then?
They'd peaked. They didn't have any goal scorers.
Right. Well, Tiki-Taka died this season, didn't it? I seem to remember reading that.
I read that too, yeah.
Well, so that's not good news.
But it died in Germany, so I don't know whether it can be resurrected or whether it didn't die in Spain. I'm a bit confused.
Right. But they don't have to be just tiki-taki now. They have some powerful centre-forwards now, of course.
Is that Diego Costa?
Yeah.
Is that a real gamble by Del Bosque taking him along, given the way that his season ended for Atletico?
Well, you say that. I mean, the way he came off in that final, if you recall, it wasn't like he collapsed on the floor holding his leg. He actually jogged off lightly as though he was coming off as a precautionary measure, you know, to say, yeah, I've got a World Cup coming up. I don't want to risk this. If I push it anymore, I am going to tear it again. So I think to some extent he already had an eye on the World Cup in that final. I'm sure he would have liked to have played it full out, but he couldn't. And, yeah, it would have been losing that and the World Cup. So
it's going to be an interesting World Cup for him, though. You know, being Brazilian and being probably the most unpopular man in the entire country for the tournament.
Or Eduardo, because he's actually going to play against Brazil.
Well, that's true, but for some reason, Eduardo doesn't seem to be such a key issue for the Brazilian fans. They're really upset about Diego Costa. Well, I mentioned the fact that Brazil gave them a bit of a thrashing last year in the Confederations Cup. Having said that, in the last three tournaments, I mean, proper tournaments, they've gone 10 consecutive clean sheets, the Spanish.
Tiki-taka nacho, isn't it?
Yeah. Very nice. So, yeah, to get out of the group then, okay, how much further?
It'll be interesting to see if they can be the first team to retain the World Cup since, Brazil in 1962. No European team has ever won the World Cup in South America.
Yeah, but when was the last South American World Cup?
78, Argentina. Yeah.
And that one was kind of heavily influenced by local politics. Yeah. So, and then before that, what would you have to go 70. Back to? Oh, 70. But no, well, that was Mexico.
Oh, yes, good point.
But actually, in South America, you'd have to go back to 1950 when, you know, half the teams turned up by steamboat and stuff. So I'm not sure that in the modern age, with modern acclimatisation techniques and
you mean like wearing three layers?
Absolutely. Whether that's necessarily a key stat. I'm not sure on what it's based, the European team's problems in South America.
My concern for Spain is I watched Diego Costa's second international debut against Italy, because he made his debut for them with Brazil and then subsequently for Spain. And, okay, it was his first game for them and he didn't seem to be in sync with what they were doing. I think Sid's mentioned it a lot of the time that it's very hard to be a striker in that position. Mm. But I think they will probably regret not taking Fernando Llorente, because I think Llorente does play at Juventus in a similar way that Spain do, in that midfielders will pass the ball to him when he's back to goal, and he'll pivot. He'll either give it back to a midfielder who'll run past him or do something with it himself. I think that, yeah, he's had such a good season. It's a bit of a shame, really, that they're taking someone who's got a muscle injury, and then David Villa and Fernando Torres, who, you know, both have kind of had indifferent few years, you know, in many respects, even though they've been to Champions League finals. And
Yeah, fair enough. What do you think, Marcus?
I'm staying out of it.
All right. Okay. Well, it's not an easy group they're in, because, of course, there's also Chile, Australia, as I say, and Holland, a nation that would be very keen on revenge on the Spanish after the World Cup final of 2010. Tell us a little bit more about the prospects for Louis van Gaal's men in orange. We're joined now by our old friend Michael Jongsma of Benefoot.net. Michael, how are you?
Hey, James, quite well. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. You're looking forward, full of optimism for this World Cup?
Well, the overall opinion hasn't been, of the Netherlands, hasn't been that positive. People think that we might just fall out of the group stages, because we obviously have a very tough group to get through with Spain and Chile and Australia in there. But, yeah, cautiously optimistic, actually, so...
All right.
Maybe we can spring a surprise or two. Who knows?
Well, the bad news, of course, was Kevin Strootman's absence with his injury. Now, am I right in saying that you think this might actually be a benefit to Holland, and a Holland team that previously has looked shaky defensively?
Yeah, well, when a player of that class, I mean, he's been wonderful for Roma this season. When a player like that misses out, that's a huge blow. And Van Gaal was quite clear on the three players that would go with him to Brazil, regardless of what would happen, in Robin, Van Persie, and Strootman. And but it also forced him to actually play in the Dutch way, the Dutch school, because when you have a midfielder like Strootman available, there's not really an excuse to not play 4-3-3, because he's such a complete midfielder. And with him dropping out of that midfield, you can actually justify playing with three centre-backs instead of two, with two wing-backs, and just change to a more counter-attacking formation. And with a player like Arjen Robben, who's a tremendous dribbler, of course, and a player like Wesley Sneijder, who can just ping balls through at will, you can actually maybe surprise your opponent a bit more.
Right, Wesley Sneijder, whose form hasn't been terrific of late, unless I'm mistaken, at Galatasaray.
For 4 years.
Well, he's done quite okay in the sense that he scored the winning goal in the Turkish Cup final.
All right. Yeah.
But I mean, when you compare it to 4 years ago, he was playing at Inter. He was one of the star men in that side.
Right.
4 years on, he's still only 29. I think he'll turn 30 this month.
All right.
But he's not of that level, and Louis van Gaal has been really critical of him. But there's hope, because he has trained with a K1 boxing fighter in order to get in shape, and apparently he's really fit at the moment. So,
all right, excellent. Boxing training.
Very nice. Out for revenge, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Van Persie, what's his fitness like coming into this?
Well, he looked really sharp, and he had a difficult season, of course, as had the whole of Manchester United, and it's probably been his best of his worst season in the last five years or so. But he looks like he wants to be the captain of this Dutch team, which he is, and he wants to prove the world that he's just a world class striker. And under Van Gaal, which is quite encouraging for Manchester United fans, I guess. Under Van Gaal and the Dutch national team, he's been incredibly prolific. Stat of Otto Johan tells us that he scored 14 goals and gave 3 assists in 16 games. So that's really a lot for a striker on an international level.
Yeah.
No,
I was just going to say, it was a great qualifying run by the Netherlands under Van Gaal. 28 points of 30.
Yeah.
So I'm just a bit surprised that there is this feeling that they might come home. I mean, it is a tough group, but it might come home so early. Is it a united group of players?
Yeah, I think so. I think what Van Gaal does best is have a few old heads that he trusts and bring in some youngsters that he can mold to his vision. And with the current group, he actually has that. Most of the players that will play in Brazil have made their debuts under Van Gaal, so they are really thankful to have been given the chance. There are several Eredivisie defenders in there who have played with each other for several years, so there's obviously a certain chemistry. And I think it's a quite a determined set, and not in the way that the Dutch were determined 4 years ago.
All right.
It's a bit more fluent. It's a bit more evolved. Nigel de Jong, who has that iconic stab on Xabi Alonso as one of his trademarks, has turned out to be a way better footballer than people give him credit for. So it's a really dynamic team, and I think... especially with Spain lacking a dribbler of the class of Robin and Chile lacking a striker of the caliber of Van Persie, there could well be a good chance for us to go through. But the one thing that most people are pessimistic about is that if you progress as number two, you'll most likely face Brazil, and that's a nightmare for all teams in the competition, I guess.
All right. Mikhail, many, many thanks for that little summary.
No problem. Cheers.
All right. Speak to you again soon.
Talk later. Bye.
Thank you, Mikhail. Mikhail Youngsma of Benefit.net. Interesting. I'm quite up on the Netherlands' chances, but Chile, though, Europe, they're kind of, are they the athletic Bilbao of the World Cup, James?
They're really impressive against England, Wembley in the winter. I think they lost to Germany in a friendly, but they outplayed them. They really impressed them. They're an awkward team to face because they play in such an unorthodox manner.
What manner is that then?
Well, just a different system to what most people are used to, you know, be it playing three at the back and variations in midfield and up front.
They also run about an awful lot, which is a very tricky thing, isn't it?
They do, and Arturo Vidal, he went under the knife, had a meniscus operation towards the end of last season. He's been excellent for Juventus for the 3 years that he's been there. He scored 18 goals this season, which, yeah, I think for a player from midfield who isn't, I don't know, a Messi or Ronaldo, is phenomenal. I think he is an all-round midfielder of the ilk of, say, Yaya Toure. He deserves to be in that sort of conversation. And then there's Alexis, who's had a good, probably his best season at Barca, scored 20 goals, can really stretch the play. I think they're a real danger. I think to some extent they're a bit top-heavy. They score a lot of goals, but they also concede a lot. Because of this awkwardness that they present opponents with, I don't think anyone will relish playing them.
Right, okay. So you've got Spain, you've got Holland, you've got Chile, and you've got Australia. Interesting lineup they're going with. It's very much a youthful, it's a kind of shot window for A-League type.
They're hosting the next Asian Championship, I think. So they're building towards that.
Lovely.
So this tournament's a bit of a write-off, I think.
Right.
They're expecting to be walloped.
Okay. Tim Cahill's going to be there?
Yeah, that's the exception, I guess.
Right. Milé Jedinak, maybe a little bit of that Crystal Palace magic. Nobody fancied them, but etc. and so on.
They're going to do a pool list, are they?
I don't know. Well, actually I do. But yeah. it's a tough group to call that. Do you want to call it and then we'll have a little bit of music?
Spain, Chile,
and Holland to go crashing out of the group stages. Can you go along with that, Marcus?
Spain, Holland.
I think RVP's record in major tournaments is woeful, and a lot of that squad is from the Eredivisie. And
right, draw your own conclusions from that.
Oh,
all right. Well, let's have a little bit of music, and then boom, Group C. Right, Group C. Can you name the teams in Group C, Paul?
Ivory Coast.
Yes.
Three others.
Yep. Well, it was pretty good that you knew. Because it's easy to say which teams are at the World Cup, but which group they're in, I find very difficult. But Ivory Coast is in there. Colombia, which starts with C, which helps a bit with that. Greece and, crucially, Japan. This is an interesting one. Colombia, they were the dark horses, weren't they? They've got defensive solidity and all that. But what they don't have now is Radamel Falcao. What does that mean, James?
That means they lose their talismanic striker, scored 9 goals, 13 games in qualifying. Last couple of years, he's been one of the most formidable forwards in the world. Be it Porto, Atletico Madrid. Yeah, unfortunate that he suffered this injury for Monaco, but they have depth in that position. They will miss him, but they have players like Jackson Martinez for Porto, Carlos Bacca for Sevilla, and Adrian Ramos, who's gone to Dortmund, who've all got into double figures in top European leagues.
Well, Ramos had an amazing season in the Bundesliga for Hertha Berlin.
Yeah, scored 16 goals, and on the back of that, has got this move to Dortmund, where with Immobile, who's gone there from Torino, he'll be looking to replace Lewandowski. So, yeah, I think they're strong in that sense. I don't think Falcao, obviously he's a leader and that sort of thing, but in terms of goals, I don't think they'll maybe miss him as much as people make out.
All right, so they still look good to get out of this group, consisting, as I say, of them, Greece, Ivory Coast, and Japan. Ivory Coast, 3 straight World Cups for them now, Paul. This is the first time that they've been in a reasonable group.
Yeah, it's a pity that that group has come at a stage when a lot of their players are sort of past their prime. The obvious example being Didier Drogba, but there's in contrast to that, Yaya Toure can say that he is arriving very much at the end of his best season, and there'll be huge onus on him to be the creative force in that team and take chances himself, but also provide chances to Boney, who you would like to imagine will start ahead of Drogba, which Sabri Lamouchi has a big decision to make there, whether to start with Drogba or not. Drogba obviously wields enormous influence in the team, but I think there wouldn't be huge criticism of him apart from Drogba himself if he didn't start Drogba. And Toure will have a pretty solid platform on which to operate because Cheick Tiote and Seri D do provide solidity in midfield, the way Fernandinho does for Man City. But in defence, I suggested that Cameroon were maybe a little fragile defensively. Ivory Coast are absolutely ramshackle because there's question marks over their entire defence, except at right back, where Serge Aurier has emerged this season as a really top class fullback. But in every other position, including goalkeeper, they're possibly very vulnerable.
Who's the goalkeeper?
It'll be
Boubacar
Barry, as ever.
Right.
And in fairness to him, he's done reasonably well at previous tournaments, despite prophecies of doom before then.
Right. Where will he feel Gervinho? Or will he feel Gervinho?
Yeah, I imagine he will definitely feel Gervinho out wide.
Right.
Who will also be providing chances to Boney, who you imagine will get the lone centre-forward role, although it could also go to Seydou Doumbia, who has a reasonable claim.
Right. Strong enough going forward to outweigh any problems at the back then in a group that also... that contains some relatively easy fixtures on paper?
Yeah, quite possibly. They got a chance of going through there.
Okay, Japan and Greece, the other two teams in there. Well, Greece, Marcus, Greece.
I'm intrigued by Greece. I kind of like them in a weird way because they don't score. I mean, they haven't scored since 2004 and obviously won the Euros then. They scored 12 goals in 10 games in qualifying, and that was in a group including Liechtenstein. They beat Liechtenstein 1-0. They didn't even score 2 against Liechtenstein. I mean, and where are the goals coming from? Kostas Mitoglou hasn't been a huge success at Fulham, I think it's fair to say. Tofanis Gekas, who I think was at Portsmouth 5 or 6 years ago.
Ooh, Georgios Samaras.
He's there, of course, and Salpingidis, the great man. But I'm amazed they're at the World Cup. I'm amazed. I can't see them scoring more than one in any game, but I kind of want them to go through in some kind of weird way.
It is quite a weird way. Interesting. All right. Well, as you say, they won the European Championships in 2004 when they were massively unfancy. But a lot of Greek observers making bigger parallels with 1994 when they went to the World Cup and I think lost every game and didn't score any goals.
Yeah.
Could be that kind of a tournament. Japan, though, they're a bit of an... Well, they're quite inscrutable, aren't they, this team under Zaccaroni?
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of success before the Confederations Cup last year when they went out in the group stages, but they're a lot of fun to watch. I mean, the game against Italy, which I think was 4-2 or 4-3, they're a team that, in contrast to their appearances at previous tournaments, actually can score goals. you look at, for example, Okazaki, who's been playing for Mainz in the Bundesliga. His record was about 1-2. You know, he scored, I think, 15 goals. They've obviously got intricate technical players who operate behind him in Kagawa and Honda, both who've had very indifferent seasons. You know, I mean, obviously, Shinji has been kind of marginalised. United hasn't pushed on in the way that I think Ferguson hoped he would under Moyes, and Honda has been really poor for Milan. But, you know, when these players meet up at an international tournament, I think they tend to perform well, as in an international setup anyway.
All right. Well, they just missed out in the quarterfinals last time. I've forgotten that they went that far, to be honest.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. Do you see them getting out of this group? Colombia, Ivory Coast, Japan, Greece. Who's your money on?
I think this is going to be a really good, fun group because apart from Greece, there are teams that can score a lot of goals and there are teams that don't defend particularly well.
Right.
So,
have you got Ivory Coast going through, Paul?
Yeah, I wouldn't put money on it, but yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if they did.
Okay, then. We're remaining non-committal about this group. I'm going to suggest Colombia might go through despite the absence of Falcao and then pretty much take your pick. All right. And of course, whoever does go through from that group will be facing one of the two teams from Group D. That's the group we're going to be looking at after this.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Ta-da! Group D. Costa Rica, Uruguay, Italia and England. One of these teams was a semi-finalist last time, Uruguay. I'm not sure if they're as good this time around. Is that right?
They're in decline, I would say. Yeah. We got the Suarez injury, which is going to have a huge impact, but they struggled in qualifying.
Yeah, that came a bit out of the blue, didn't it?
The Suarez injury or the struggling in qualifying or both?
Well, no, the Suarez injury and having an operation and stuff.
Yeah, and they tried to blame Liverpool a little bit. So I don't know. They said he had an injury coming into it and stuff like that. I don't know whether that was insurance-wise or whatever. And it's never good when you have that kind of injury in 10 days, 12 days. Is he really going to be fit? Is he going to try too much? And are they going to play him? Is he going to be 60% and stuff like that? And looking throughout the team, they are on the way down, I think. I mean, they got Diego Lugano is one of their key players. He spent most of his time on the bench at West Brom this season. That doesn't mean that he can't play well at the World Cup, and some of these players are good enough to step up. But I get a sense that Uruguay could struggle.
Right, which is good news for Italy and England, because Costa Rica are not widely tipped to do great things in Brazil either, and got beaten the other day by Japan, didn't they?
3-1.
Yeah. 3-1.
I mean, they lost, I think, their top scorer in qualifying, Saborillo. He had the metatarsal injury. Yeah, he ticked that World Cup bingo box.
Right, okay. So that leaves us with Italy and England. Who's going to win the group?
I don't know, it's another toss of a coin. England could win it, or they could go out.
All right. It looks like...
I think it would be a failure if England didn't make it out of that group. Because although they're big names, none of them have as much quality as they do stature. Uruguay, as just been mentioned, are, apart from two excellent strikers, are pretty ropey elsewhere. And England have a lot of quality.
Have they got exciting young players as well? A lot of buzz around England, even though people talk about low expectations. There's actually kind of underneath the low expectations quite high expectations, and a lot of that's down to the fact you've got Ross Barkley and
Sterling
of course, Lallana. Yeah, all very refreshing if Hodgson approaches this in the right manner. Do you think he will, Marcus?
I'm really intrigued by the first game. I think I can't wait for it, actually. And both James will know more about Prandelli and how he's approached it. And he had that camp in mid-May, didn't he, where he assessed every player and he's gone in. And from what I read, it seems like he might have prepared better than Hodgson. I might be completely wrong, of course. And England might run them off the park. But I think it's a huge game, and win that and you're set off and you're probably fine and you can not start planning for the knockout stage, but it's a huge game.
Italy, I think, will have most of the ball in that game, won't they? So it's just about how effectively England can counter-attack.
Particularly if the indications...
And these set pieces, sorry.
I mean, the expectation is from the friendlies that Italy have had so far is that Marco Verratti will play, will be maybe a in the first team, and will play alongside Andrea Pirlo. So, I mean, England and Italy's other opponents could very well have the prospect of not having to deal with maybe just one Pirlo on the pitch, but two, you know, in the sense that Verratti is someone who can dictate the play, the tempo, very good passer of the ball. And I think that's maybe one of the contingencies that Prandelli's put in place for teams that are going to look to shut down Pirlo. I mean, we shouldn't pretend that this has been opposition strategy for years now. Everyone looks at Italy and thinks, if we can shut down Pirlo, we can shut down Italy. But this is a team that has a Juventus spine. Obviously, Juventus have Pirlo. They've, over the years, come up with several counter strategies as to kind of allow Pirlo to play, even though if someone is shadowing him all the time, be it him coming wide to influence play from there, dragging players out of position. They often have a centre back who can step out when Pirlo's man marked and play the ball. So and obviously if they've got Verratti there, you know, he can do that well. De Rossi can pass the ball. So
you've got a midfield there of the suggestion is we're recording this before they play against Luxembourg in a top level pre World Cup friendly there, that it's going to be
a really interesting system played against Luxembourg. They play 4-1-3-1-1, and De Rossi would be in front of the defence. And if the fullbacks push forward, he'd drop him in between it. Then Marchisio, Pirlo and Verratti in midfield, and Candreva just playing off Balotelli. Now,
right.
Candreva and Marchisio, both players who got into double figures scoring-wise, can both break into the box and score. So, again, a team that doesn't have many sort of reference points in attack. You know, they'll have Balotelli, but he often comes short, plays the ball. It'll be a difficult team for anyone to sort of pick up on.
Right.
I think Prandelli going into this is typically sort of Italian ways. He has two default systems, you know, 3-5-2 that they play at Juventus, and this one that he's been working on now, this 4-3-1-1. But, yeah, they're working on not just playing one system from one game to the next, but from one phase of play to another. So there'll be a complicated equation for anyone.
All right. Width, do they offer any width?
Yeah, I mean, one of the surprises was Giuseppe Rossi didn't make the squad.
Right.
And I think his place has been taken really by Lorenzo Insigne, the Napoli player who can play on the left-hand side. So Cassano can play on the left-hand side as well. Alessio Cerci and Candreva can play wide on the right. So they can play a 4-3-3 if they want as well. So they do have attacking width, which is something that they haven't always had.
Cassano, the interesting figures up front. Cassano, how much he plays, we'll have to see. But he's been the saving grace for Italy in tournaments before, but he is at the same time...
It's his first World Cup.
His first World Cup. And this is post-a-heart operation, post... donut crises, post all sorts of stuff. But he's had a terrific season at Parma, and he is. If you talk about players who lift the atmosphere, I think for a brief period of time, he certainly does that. Of course, well, months into it, he starts to tell everyone to get stuff. But at least to begin with, he'll be a jolly fellow.
He might play Luxembourg by the time we go, but he hasn't played since the Euro 2012 final for Italy.
Right.
And it did look like it was over for him because... he wasn't a disruptive influence in Poland and Ukraine, but he made some inopportune comments in a press conference, homophobic comment, I think didn't go down particularly well because it brought a lot of heat on the squad. And Prandelli's experience of the Confederations Cup that Marcus was alluding to was that the physical conditions mean you're going to have to be very physically fit to play in this. And Cassano obviously isn't a model professional in that sense. You know, he does like his donuts. He does like to put a lot of weight on. He doesn't like to do a lot of running. And so that seemed to rule him out. But, all credit to him. He's kind of proven himself and done really well in playing, but also in the sort of physical tests that they've been doing.
The English press will probably put Italy's chances down to whether Balotelli turns up or not, which Balotelli turns up, if you like.
That's probably not quite right, and as you've pointed out. And I think... The thing I think about England this time is that they got a striker in form and a striker a lot of countries would love to have in their squad. I mean, look at Germany. They're bringing one closer and he's 34, 35 shortly now, by now. And Spain with their injuries and stuff like that. But in England, they've got a really... I mean, he must be in the top five form-wise of all World Cup strikers. And that's exciting. And he can score from nowhere. And I go... I know Peru wasn't marking him that tightly, and Chiellini will probably look after that when they play Manaus. But he can score, and he can score against most teams. So England should be really excited about this.
Right. And behind the strikers, they have genuine movement, speed and ingenuity with Lallana, Sterling, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Barkley potentially. And so they're not as predictable as England's sides in the past.
Mm. Yeah. How about at the back, Paul?
Probably not as strong as England's sides in the past, but they're not terrible. They're being amongst the certainly the strong, probably be amongst the strongest in the tournament. Like a pace, Glenn Johnson hasn't had a great season, I suppose, and he's a potential liability. But Cahill and Jagielka offer set piece power, which is not to be underestimated. Mm. They could contribute with goals, so they're okay.
I have a feeling that they might give Italy, certainly, and indeed the group, a real problem, because Italy's considered passing and tactical discipline is all very well, but if you have players that can run and have the kind of verve and pace that England are bringing, I think that's put the Italians in trouble on a lot of occasions in the past.
Yeah, I think Italy.
I don't think England should sit back against Italy. I think if they go at them, they're more likely to get the result.
I agree with Paul. I think the if Roy is courageous in his team selection, they could cause Italy genuine problems, because I don't think this Italy defence is as good as it has been in previous tournaments. It's more or less the same defence that did get to a Euro 2012 final. But I don't think it's up to the standard of the ones in the 90s and the early 2000s. And you have to remember that I don't think Prandelli will play a back three unless he's faced with a front two, if you know what I mean. And that Juventus back three is unused to playing in a back four. So I think there are some worries there, particularly Chiellini and Barzagli aren't the most mobile centre-backs. And if you've got someone like Sterling running at him, like Sterling did so well for Liverpool against United or something like that, I think that could be a major preoccupation for them. But I think that's one of the reasons why we'll probably see De Rossi just sitting there.
Right.
And looking to lock it down.
Will Hodgson be courageous? Yay, nay?
Probably not courageous enough to drop Rooney.
All right. Okay, and that would be key, do you think? Because that's one area we haven't touched on. If you've got Sturridge,
I'd start Sterling instead of Rooney.
Sterling instead of Rooney?
Yeah.
I'm with Paul on that.
Yeah. Right, okay. But that's not going to happen.
He probably won't. Not. Probably right. Won't do it.
Okay. Well, that would make for an interesting camp, wouldn't it? If Rooney was on the bench for that opening game. It's a really tough group to call, this one. Who's going to win it, Marcus?
England.
Right. And Italy going through?
Italy to go through, yeah, Italy, absolutely.
Okay. Paul?
England and Uruguay. No, Italy and Uruguay.
Italy and Uruguay.
Ask me again in 5 seconds, I'll say something different.
All right. But do you mean that? Are you being contrary? Or
no, I mean it's possible.
It is possible.
I can envisage almost any scenario except Costa Rica going through.
Right, okay. All right, James?
Costa Rica and... I think England and Italy.
Right, and in that order, no? It's funny, Italy are a great tournament team. They also do start slowly in tournaments traditionally.
Yeah. And England aren't a great tournament team. England have been mentally weak. It's been one of their biggest failings. So there's a huge onus on Hodgson to establish the correct mentality as much as that. And that will be reflected in his approach to games and his team selection. If he gets a positive, then England could win the group and go quite far.
Wow, they certainly could. They certainly could. Well, it's all going to be kicking off very soon before the World Cup gets underway. Though on Monday, we'll be back with groups E to H, including such delights as Germany, of course, Bosnia-Herzegovina and Argentina. So do join us for that. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Paul Doerr, Marcus Christensen and James Horncastle. And you, dear listener, will be back after the weekend. Have a blinder.